what's happening in healthcare, politics, and how to deal with it all. It's time for Political Pulse with Dr. Tony Maglione on 106.7 Mind Talker Radio.
Welcome to Political Pulse. I'm Dr. Tony Maglione, the doctor that's looking out both for your health and your nation's health. You're listening to the new 106.7 FM My Talker Radio. Our website here is WMYT1067FM.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WMYT1067. Number here at the station is 910-833-8764. And we're going to start the show tonight with a guest, Frank Amoroso, who has written the book Behind Every Great Fortune. He is an attorney and also known to be the husband of Rhonda Amoroso, who was the chairperson of the new Hanover Republican Party here, where we had such great success getting a lot of Republicans to local elections and in office. Now, well, welcome, Frank.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, let's get started. You wrote this book, and this is going to be a part of a trilogy of three books. And just give us a little short description as to what motivates you to do this in the first place, and just a short description of, you know, of what the book is about.
Okay, this is the first of a trilogy of historical fiction, and my main character is a fellow named Otto Kahn, who people would recognize as the Monopoly guy. He's the little icon character with the top hat and the cane. And I went to an event at a place called Ohika Castle, which is on Long Island's Gold Coast. And Ohika is Otto Hermann Kahn's initials.
You're talking about the North Coast near Huntington.
Right, where the, a lot of the robber barons had mansions. And I, at the time, I had no idea who he was, and I was impressed with this edifice, which is the second largest private residence ever built in this country after the Biltmore. And at the time,
the Biltmore in Asheville with the Vanderbilts.
Correct.
Okay.
And so it's a spectacular venue, and I asked about it, and I was told it was built by Otto Kahn, and I said, well, who's he? And nobody knew who he was, and so when I researched him, I found him to be a fascinating historical character. I was reading a book which had a fabulous quote which said, if you want to be a good ghost, stay quiet for a century, and then begin to haunt the dreams of a writer who will write your story the way it should be told. And I guess Otto Kahn felt the vibrations of me researching him and began to haunt me. So I did extensive research into the era, which is the early 20th century, and it just led me to write this book, which talks about the beginning of the First World War, the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand, which led to the war, the murder of Rasputin, the Russian Revolution.
Well, I know you tie in all these characters, and I know some of it is based on, you know, the truth of what happened historically, and others you just happen to bring them in into the book. And, you know, Otto Kahn is a real character. And in the book, he is a financier which travels throughout Europe. Now, does he go to Russia, or does he?
Well, it's interesting. He was. There are three biographies written about him, and they all talk about his career and go into great detail about his role as a banker who focused on railroad construction and finance. And also, he was the director of the Metropolitan Opera. So he was involved with many of the major stars of the day, Enrico Caruso, Vaslav Nijinsky, Arturo Toscanini. And in each of the books, they said, and by the way, he spent 3 or 4 months in Europe, and they never said who he met and what he did.
But was he building his fortune also in Europe, that his business, or is that hard to tell from the research?
Well, it's very hard to tell, and his books are kept at Princeton University, all of his personal records and business records. And I was there on a number of occasions and going through the documents, and what was very curious to me was how little they talked about his time in Europe. So I took that as a novelist to take the opportunity to place him in different situations in Europe at the time. He meets with Winston Churchill. He develops a relationship with Tsar Nicholas II. He runs into Rasputin, of course, who was very influential in the Tsarist administration, and clashes with Rasputin. So as a novelist, you can come up with imaginary dialogue. You could come up with manufactured meetings and events and answer the question, what if?
Now, did you, when you wrote this, I'm just curious, because one of the things that came to my mind, did you think of, like, Forrest Gump, like, okay, I'm going to have these famous characters come in, and he's through Otto's, you know, doings, although the difference is Forrest wasn't successful and totally imaginary, and Otto was real. So I think it's kind of like a different concept of that, of bringing in those characters.
It's very similar, historical
but
fiction.
Did you think about that? Did that cross your mind? Or?
Not specifically Forrest Gump, but I thought about the trilogy written by Leon Uris, The Winds of War, which placed a fictional character, Pug Henry,
right,
in Europe during the World War II, and then he got transferred to the Pacific Theater when we were fighting the Japanese. So it's very common in historical fiction to move the characters around explain the events.
It makes it more interesting because, you know, a lot of the characters are people we know, like you mentioned, Winston Churchill, Nicholas the Tsar of Russia, and, you know, we're going to talk after the break a little bit about the relationship there you had with Margaret Sanger and the inspiration behind that. And I think all of that is fascinating. But the book, by the title, Behind Every Great Fortune, is the message that somehow if a person comes to great wealth, there's got to be some sabotage or something wicked that might be behind it, or is that left for interpretation?
Well, it's certainly left for interpretation as to what is a great fortune, but I think there's a quote attributable to Balzac, and it was quoted in The Godfather, although I wasn't aware of it when I wrote the book. But basically, behind every great fortune lies a great crime. And if you think about the great fortunes, whether it's King Tut or whether it's some of the robber barons, somewhere in the beginning
or the mob,
or along the way, there was a great crime.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we even currently, people who are successful find themselves in positions where they may have stepped on a few toes. And even though it might have been legal, there may have been some ethical issues as to what they did. But in this book, Otto is not just stepping on a few toes, it looks like. It looks like he's going past that point.
Well, I think it's certainly not an indictment of success. It's really a commentary on just phenomenal Midas-like fortunes. Of all of a sudden you come from being a shoemaker, and then all of a sudden you have $10 billion.
Right.
So how did that occur? And how does, and it's not in this book, but in the second book and the third book, which will cover the rest of the 20th century, in the second and third book, it will point out how wealth becomes legitimized. And we saw it in the Godfather movies where, you know, Michael Corleone is hobnobbing with U.S. senators and becomes a respectable, quote-unquote, businessman.
Money buys you some power and some access. That's no doubt about it. Well, we're going to go to our first break. Just remind the people your website if they want to obtain the book.
The website is behindeverygreatfortune.com. And the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Next Century Publishing.
Okay, this is Dr. Tony Maglione on Political Pulse. We'll be back with more after the break. Dr. Tony Maglione. You are listening to the new 106.7 FM My Talker Radio. We're talking with Frank Amoroso about his book, Behind Every Great Fortune. If you have any questions, you can give us a call here to the end of the half hour. The number here is 833-8764, and we'll resume the discussion. And one of the things I noted, Frank, is that there were a lot of people, you know, we talked about that are famous, that we're aware of, and Nobel, who does, you know, in the family of the Nobel Peace Prize, had a relationship with Nicholas, the Tsar, Nicholas II. And can you tell me if that was real? That's correct.
Absolutely, it was true that Emmanuel Nobel ran the Russian petroleum industry, and his family was very influential in creating storage and other innovations of transportation that enable petroleum to become widely available. What's interesting about the Nobel family is that Emmanuel Nobel's uncle, Ludwig, passed away, and the newspapers wrote scathing editorials about his brother, who was Nobel's uncle, and he had invented dynamite, and he made it a fortune.
The one who started the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. Okay. So he felt so bad that he was viewed so poorly on his death that he bequeathed all of his fortune to establish the Nobel Prizes. And it was not only peace, but chemistry and literature and other. There were seven categories of the Nobel Prize.
The irony, I think, is also not only, you know, he invented dynamite, which is destructive, also the relationship with Russia, which ended up having, you know, a autocracy where people were oppressed and people were, there was no peace. There had to be eventually a revolution to overcome that.
Well, exactly.
Which resulted in communism.
The Romanovs ruled for over 300 years, and it was an autocratic government where the Tsar was almost considered like a god. He was considered the father protector of the people, and they revered him. So as a consequence, the people that were actually running the government ran it with a very much of an iron fist.
Well, we had a call. You can call back if you want to talk to us. The next person I wanted to talk about was Margaret Sanger, and she's involved in a relationship with Otto. And the question is, was that true? And why did you want to bring her into the book? What was the objective?
Well, I found that in looking back 100 years, there were significant trends that sprung up intellectually and also in the popular experience. And one of them was the eugenics movement, which arose out of Darwinism. And Margaret Sanger was very much in the forefront of that movement and in the idea of birth control and basically cleansing the population. So what
just explain for the audience, Margaret Sanger was the person who, you know, trumpeted birth control and deciding who.
Well, Margaret Sanger was one of the people that founded Planned Parenthood, and Margaret Sanger was very much in the forefront of birth control. Now, there were laws on the books at the time that prohibited educational endeavors about birth control and about women's issues, and she was in the forefront of that, and those issues were important that information be disseminated. But she also carried that thought into eugenics and basically racial purity, that people who were perceived as inferior, and there were theories back in those days that just by looking at you, by the shape of your head or the size of certain facial features, you were destined to be a criminal. And so there were very bad judgments made about who was entitled to
right, totally
should be entitled to live.
Elitist and deterministic in ways that are just totally outside the realms of what should be human nature. And in your book, you had her as disrespecting marriage and that she had an open relationship. Is that something that was true?
That was definitely
true. So, I mean, and it looked like she really disrespected the notion of God. And so we have Margaret Sanger, the person, everybody who is so pro-abortion, what she really wanted to do was eliminate as much of the undesirables. And at that time, for her and those elite people, it was the Negroes. Is that not correct?
Well, in 1939, she established what was called the Negro Project. And it's absolutely an abomination that goes ignored in modern history, because her thought and her project was to eliminate what she perceived as inferior people. And what they did was they enlisted the clergy in the black community, and the clergy was the ones that were the ones
help
that
sell
helped
it.
Sell the whole birth control
just
idea.
To finish this point, she achieved her goal, because now for the first time in New York, there are more abortions than black births right now. So she's actually achieving that goal many, many decades later.
The way they went about it was to put birth control centers in the low-income ghetto areas, and that's typically where minorities lived.
Now, one last thing before we tell people where they can get the book again and other events that you're doing, to relate it to current events like today with the Ukraine, that you had a thought about how Putin is almost czar-like.
Well, Putin is very much acting in an autocratic fashion. And what's frightening to me is when you look at the history, and the philosopher George Santayana said, those who don't acknowledge history are destined to repeat it. When you look at the beginning of World War I and the alliances that led to one, that Germany declared war on Russia and England and France declared war on Germany, we are approaching that type of situation now, where the United States and several of the allied countries may be drawn into a war with Russia and Iran and other countries. China in particular would side with Russia, and before you know it, it could very easily begin a world war.
And escalate.
I was very concerned the other day when I heard that John Kerry, our Secretary of State, was in Kiev, and it just flashed in my mind that, well, if he were assassinated like the Archduke was assassinated, all hell would break loose. And I think the next world war will be the last world war.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of this segment, and let us know what event you have coming, and remind us again about the website where they
can get
the book.
Will be at the Pomegranate Bookstore on Park Avenue off South College Road next Thursday at 7 p.m.
That's Wilmington, not in New York.
That's in Wilmington, and I encourage you to come out. I'll be doing a reading from the book. My website is BehindEveryGreatFortune.com. We also have a Twitter account, at Otto's Monocle. Interestingly, the New York Times today had an article about monocles are coming back in fashion. And in my book, Behind Every Great Fortune, I refer to Otto Kahn in many places as the Monocle.
Well, great. But we definitely enjoyed it. I enjoyed reading it, and it's definitely recommended. Thank you for being here tonight, Frank, and good luck with the sales of the book.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. That brings us to the end of this part of Political Pulse. I'm Dr. Tony Maglione. We'll be back after the break.